This is Crystal Z. Campbell. I'm here in Hudson, New York, at the Hudson Library in the community room. I'm sitting here with Mashonda Franklin, and I am going to pass the mic so Mashonda can introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Mashonda Franklin, long life resident of Hudson, New York, Hudson High graduate, and current chief of police of the city of Hudson.
Thank you, Mashonda, for being here with me today. What would you prefer that I call you?
Mashonda is fine. My friends and family growing up call me Shani. Some coworkers still call me that, but I think more prevalent now is Mashonda. So okay. Whichever you prefer.
It's a beautiful name. Can you tell me about your name?
I wish there was some really, really exquisite story behind it, but there isn't. I don't know if it has some origins or not, but I believe it was just a created name by my mother when I was younger, and here we are.
Can you tell me about your earliest memories of Hudson, New York?
Oh, my. I grew up on the 200 block of State Street. My family previously had a home on the 300 block of State Street, but that was destroyed in a fire. And so I grew up on the 200 block of State, and I remember playing in the yard, playing out on the sidewalk, riding my bike, at least when I was very young.
What do you remember about how the city looked around that time?
I would say it was a community where everyone knew everyone. Families, kids, neighbors knew everyone. My family knew who lived next door to them, who lived across the street from them, who lived down the block, up the block. It was very quaint. There wasn't a lot of money, I should say. People worked hard, factories, and you know, everyone just living day by day. John L. Edwards, that's where I went to elementary school. The old library on State Street. It was a much simpler time.
And who were people that you cared for at that time?
My family was very close. I was raised by my aunt, who became my adopted mother, my great grandmother, my aunt. I lived in a home with my cousins, and my other grandmother actually worked in the school district and in Hudson. Everyone worked in Hudson.
Can you share more about, if you're comfortable talking about, your adoption?
I was adopted when I was born. My biological mother was unable to care for me and was friends with my adopted mother, who was also my paternal aunt, and so I was raised by my father's side of the family.
What was that experience like growing up with your father's side of the family?
It was wonderful. I think growing up, there was always a question of my other side of the family. But as I grew older, I learned that my biological mother's family did not wish to have contact with me because they were not accepting of the fact that I was biracial. But I was okay with that because I had all of the love that I needed and I wanted at home. My family did help me get in touch with my biological aunt and uncle, so I did meet them. But I never really built a relationship with them. Mainly the family that I knew, that I know, are the family that I grew up with.
Can you share a little bit more about your identity and your biological parents, their identities?
I can only share with you with what I know, and I don't know much. My mother was Caucasian. My father was African American. Both lived in Hudson. Unfortunately, they both were in and out of jail. From the history that I know, have been arrested in the past by the Hudson Police Department, and my mother passed away when she was incarcerated, and then my father, years later, when I was a teenager, I may have been in college, actually. I can't remember. No, I had already graduated college. I can't remember the year, but he had passed away from a lot of health issues.
When did you learn about the adoption?
I knew when I was very young. I don't know what age I was, but my family never kept that a secret, and nor did I ever feel like I was lacking for anything in my childhood because of it. I was very grateful that I was still able to live with and know my family.
Can you say, tell me about a day in the life with your family in your youth, what you remember like a day passing might be like?
I would say probably the most memorable days would probably be Sundays. My family was very religious growing up, so Sundays would be not church because we were Jehovah's Witnesses. So we would go to the Kingdom Hall, which essentially was our church. We would also have Bible studies on Thursday evenings at our home. But we would always have people in and out. My grandmother would cook. I would help her cook. We would have family Sunday dinners. We would provide meals to friends and neighbors as well, and I would help deliver them. Thursday nights after Bible study, we would have people gathering in the house for snacks and just very social.
Can you say more about your grandmother? What kind of person she was?
My great-grandmother, how do I describe her? She was, in my eyes, a saint. she held the family together, really. Excuse me. She was the person that anyone could go to if they needed something. And she would have an open door policy for anyone and everyone and give the shirt off her back for them.
What was it like to have her as an example?
It was really beautiful. Her, my mother, my adoptive mother, my aunt. I was raised by some very strong Black women who never gave up. No matter what life threw at them, challenges ahead, they never kept going. They never stopped. They kept going. When I was growing up, my mother was really sick. She passed away when I was younger. My grandmother lost her son and other children. So she was predeceased by several of her children, and she never let it break her. And so seeing that resiliency in her really carried over as an example for me, that as tough and as difficult life can be, we are strong enough to get through it if we have the support of those we care about around us.
Can you tell me about your experiences in school?
Which experiences?
What going to school here was like in Hudson?
And I think some of my best days or most fun days of school were John L. Edwards, and we had the old wooden and metal playground with stones. We used to play no-touch ground tag all the time, the field trips, just the number of kids that were playing and laughing there.
Do you remember sort of what the demographic was like of the other, of the school that you went to?
It was pretty diverse then. I mean, I guess I didn't really notice it, or maybe I did and I just didn't pay attention, because I was raised in a family where I'm biracial, but most people would say I'm white presenting, but my family is not, so it wasn't... I guess a surprise to me to see children of different skin colors or of different backgrounds, because it was just what I was used to.
Do you remember any incidents where the difference came up, or where people asked about, you know, why you may have looked different from your family?
Honestly, I can't. I think one of the beautiful things about Hudson was that everyone knew who you were. Everyone knew who your family was. And if they didn't, they quickly found out, because word travels fast, and it did travel fast. Like, oh, that's so-and-so's cousin, or oh, that's so-and-so's niece. Or, oh, that's so-and-so's granddaughter. So I really cannot recall where that was ever really a question.
How do you prefer to identify?
Black. I would say at my core, that is me. And I think over the years, that's changed to where I've preferred to be referred to as other, because I think for all of us, we're not just black or white or Caucasian or African American. We are a mix of a lot of different ethnicities, and until you search a little deeper, you don't know that, and you just kind of say, well, this is what I look like, so this is what I'm going to identify as.
And can you take me into your formative sort of younger adult years and where you found yourself?
Yeah. So I guess growing up again, I'll repeat, we were very religious. My family still is practicing Jehovah's Witness. I was baptized, I think, when I was 14. My mother was really sick. I did have to help take care of her. It was just a responsibility that we had in our household that everybody chipped in and did what we could for the family. She had to go into rehab centers for a leg amputation. And so that was difficult. That was through early high school. And then she got really sick and passed away when I was 15.
How did that change your daily life when she passed away?
At first, I was very relieved. For several years of my childhood, not only did I have to see her suffer, but my grandmother, my aunt, my entire family. And she was not happy with her condition and quality of life. So I was very relieved that she did not have to suffer anymore. I knew that I had a lot of family support. I had a lot of friends who helped me through the difficult time. And like I said, my family always showed me, my grandmother, my aunt, everyone around me always showed me that, you know, life still goes on and tragedies do happen and we have to grieve and allow ourselves to grieve in any manner that we need to. But if we get stuck or if we stop living, we're not honoring our loved ones who have passed. So, like I said, initially I was relieved. I think there were times where I was really angry and upset that she was not there for certain milestones, especially like graduation. But I knew that I had the love of my family who was still alive and appreciative of the fact that I still had my family.
Did you remain in the same household after she passed?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My aunt became my primary guardian. And so I still live with the same family. You know, she's like my second mom. And yeah, then I, you know, later when I, after graduation, I went away to school. I thought that leaving the area was going to like help things. So I moved away to Arizona, went to school. Then I transferred back to New York and attended New York University. Then my grandmother was getting older and getting more sick. I was in New York City during 9/11, and that kind of changed the trajectory of my life a little bit.
Can you tell me about what happened during 9/11 that shifted your trajectory and also any memories that you have of that time?
Yeah. So the morning of 9/11, I actually skipped class. I think someone was really watching out for me on that day because normally I would have taken the subway to go to school at West 4th on West 4th Street at NYU. And instead, I decided that I was going to skip class because I wanted to visit the World Trade Center, ironically. And then, you know, I was taking my time, showering, got a text message, turned on the news, and saw that the Twin Towers were hit. And so I essentially made a plan to come back home. Metro North was offering free train rides to anyone going north of the city. School got canceled, I think, for the remainder of the week. And so I came home to Hudson and waited that out for a little bit. And then when we returned back to school the following week, it was pretty eerie. But I finished out the school year, well, that semester and then the spring semester, and just the impact that that had on so many people's lives, seeing the first responders come together, you know, the country coming together to support all the people who lost their lives, to just try to recover people and just help with the efforts to clean up and to, you know, rebuild was very impressive to me and beautiful. And so I decided that I didn't want to finish school, even though I was in school for sociology with a minor in law. And I decided that instead that I could impact lives in a different way by becoming a police officer.
And what were your next steps after that? Did you stay in New York City for a little bit longer?
No, after the spring semester, I came back home, and I think I was working part-time at ShopRite in the bakery, all while speaking to the then chief of police, Ellis Richardson, and making a plan to take the civil service test, to see if I could get sponsored to go to the police academy. So when I came home, that was 2002. I started the police academy in the fall of 2003. And then, no, correction, 2002. And then I graduated in 2003. I was hired by Hudson Police Department in February of 2003.
Can you share your experience of the police academy?
Sure. I would like to go back a little bit. There was something that I missed that I'd like to bring up about my childhood and growing up and my first job and employment. My first job was with Operation Unite New York. Elena Mosley was my employer at the time. And that was when the Black Arts Cultural Festival, that's what it was called back then, was like really big. And my first job as a 14-year-old was to contact vendors for that festival. So that was, I think, my very first experience of, you know, interacting with people on a professional level. And that was really nerve-wracking. But, you know, the following summer after that, I was employed by the City of Hudson and the Youth Center. Now Youth Center, but then Boys and Girls Club. And I worked as a summer counselor. And it was really fun.
thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And yeah, I'd love to hear about your experience in the academy.
Yeah, it's a little nerve-wracking, I think. I went to the Zone 14 Police Academy, and that year it was held at Germantown Central School. I'm not sure if they weren't able to get the college that year or what the case was, but, you know, it was a lot of getting yelled at, being told what to do, wearing your uniforms just so, getting in trouble if your uniforms weren't just so. I was fortunate enough to know many people in law enforcement. Again, the city of Hudson is small. Columbia County was known for having families that knew one another, so it wasn't unusual to know the people that you were working beside, and it was not unusual to go to the academy with people that you knew. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to go to the academy with people who I know from the sheriff's office, people who I know now at Hudson Police Department. And so it was lengthy. It was a part-time academy, so there were evenings, there were Saturdays. We had to do physical fitness tests. We had to pass those fitness tests. We had to pass rigorous academic standards. And then if you were successful, and some weren't, we got to graduate and hopefully have a full-time job when we were done.
Can you share a moment within the academy where you felt like you overcame something that was difficult?
I think just overcoming and successfully completing it was a huge accomplishment for me. Being raised in a religious family, they were originally not very supportive of me becoming a police officer. So that weighed on me a little bit during that time, not having their support, which generally I always did. They didn't try to stop me from becoming a police officer. I think they were more concerned about the safety aspect of it, as well as the perception from the religious standpoint.
How did you see police officers at that time?
I'm not sure I had any opinion of them, other than it takes a strong individual to stand up against, you know, crime and bad things when most of the time they're being scrutinized. And then seeing a different side of that during 9/11 is that, you know, they are faced with a lot that most people don't understand or don't see or are unwilling to see. And I just truly wanted to be in the field as a biracial woman and try to make a change, right? I think we are told at a very young age is you can be anything you want to be. You can do anything you want as long as you put your mind to it. And, you know, when I started in 2003, it was more of a predominantly male populated field. And trying to recruit young women to be in this field is very difficult. And I truly wanted to be able to give back to my community and try to make a change here in Hudson, because the perception of police in Hudson back then was not very good.
Can you say more about how police officers were perceived here?
Oh, corrupt. There were a lot of stories about corruption within the Hudson Police Department. And I think the old chief, Ellis, when he became chief, was really trying to recruit diversity and bring more people from the community who look like our community into the police department. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to be a part of it, to be able to try to break down, hopefully, break down barriers between what the perception was and then the reality.
Can you give me an example of how that perception plays out in real life?
I think we talk about it even now, is that people don't trust the police, or they don't want to trust the police. We see what is on the news, what is on the media, what is in history, and the police not having positive interactions with the community, and I wanted to change that. I wanted to be able to show people I knew, I grew up with, families that I knew, that the interactions can be both, could also be positive. You know, it's difficult because most people only see police on their worst day. And we tend to show up when bad things are happening. And so it's very difficult for people to not be standoffish and to not act as if the police are the enemy. And I never have really let that upset me or bother me, because it's up to me, it's up to us to change their minds.
You mentioned the representation of being a biracial woman in the police force and standing with community. Can you say more about some of the things that you've done, some of the things that you're proud of?
I think the biggest thing for me is community engagement and community policing. Getting out there, walking, talking to people, and showing up for them. And for different events, and I think whether or not you yourself really believe in them, showing up to support the community in ways that maybe the police never did before shows people that what they do is important, that you hear them, that you see them. And ultimately, no matter what the circumstances, no matter what the call is, no matter what the incident is, when we show up for people, whether it's police and community or in our families, school, the way we show up for people matters. And so if I respond to a call and it's someone's worst day and I just listen, it makes a difference. You know, listen without judgment. And try to assist and guide if I can. And sometimes that's enough to change people's perspective.
What is something you wish people knew about what it means to be a police officer?
That's a difficult question. You know, some would say this is the greatest job on the earth. We get to see so much. We get to interact with so many people. We get to save lives. I believe there's a lot of focus on the negative of arresting people and, you know, again, what the media shows, and those things happen. But what they don't see is the heaviness that this can bring to your life, whether it's interviewing child victims, whether it's seeing someone you love pass away in this profession, or someone in your community that you've seen in a tragic accident pass away, and then having to notify those families that these things happen. I really would like to stress the importance that we are still human, and that even though we carry these things around with us, with sort of a lightness, it's pretty heavy. And one of the biggest things I think that is an accomplishment of mine is being able to implement like a wellness program for officers. We have a therapy canine now that is available to not only us, residents, other organizations, the school, as a tool. And that was not able to be done without community partnerships, without support of community organizations, youth organizations here that supported that for Hudson. And I'm truly grateful for those community partnerships that I've built over the past few years.
That's really important, that care, the canine program. Mm-hmm. What other ways do you think about care in relationship to the police force?
It's just one, we're just one big family, as maybe dysfunctional at times, but it's no different than having an extended family. You spend so much time with the people you work with. You get to know, you know, about their families, what they like, what they dislike, what sets them off, what calms them down, all of their nuances, and how you interact each day with them makes a difference. And showing the people you work with, or who work for me now, I guess, that you care about what's going on in their lives is really important. I don't think anyone wants to go to work and just have a boss who knows nothing about them, nothing about their family, nothing about what they enjoy to do or what they're going through. And that's truly important. I have an open door policy. If anyone wants to talk about anything, come on in and talk. And I'll sit and I'll listen. And And I believe, I'd like to believe that that truly helps.
Can you say more about some of the challenges that women face in the force?
I think there's this preconceived notion that women are more fragile emotionally, physically, and I don't think that that's true. I believe we're just made different. And that has been proven time and time again, I think, in my tenure. And where women who may, we may not have the same physical capability as a man, biologically, we still have to pass the same physical fitness standards. We still have to pass the same academic standards. And when we need to get our hands dirty, we will. Women, I think, have a different perspective and can bring a lot of different value to the table. And I, in my experience, I've had to go hands-on a lot less than my male partners because we just tend to be more empathetic, willing to listen. And I, again, I believe that's biological in nature. We just tend to be more caring. So I think breaking down those barriers, though, that women are incapable of the same things as men in this profession, has been very important.
Can you tell me about a specific moment where you felt like that was to your advantage?
Oh, man, I probably could give you several occasions, but there was a time for a few years where I worked with an all-female shift that wasn't allowed for a while for a number of different reasons, but it did happen for a few years, and I think there were times where we knew someone had previously been in a physical altercation with a male counterpart that we were able to talk to and arrest them without any physical altercation. Let's see. I think one of those times was when there was a stolen motor vehicle and the operator was lying to us about something, where the car was, where they were going, who they were with, and I guess the gift of gab helped my partner and I out. And we made an arrest and no physical altercation. And that person talked to us about that, and said, you know, I could have fought with you, but I didn't. I truly believe if we acted a little bit more aggressively or gave that person an inclination that we were going to get physical, it probably would have, and it didn't. So I consider that a success.
What has been one of your most difficult times on the force?
Um, probably have three. One was when we lost a fellow officer. Years ago. That wasn't while on duty, but that was challenging then. Another time was when I had to notify. Notify a family that I knew as long-term Hudson residents that their grandson, son, nephew might not survive from a motorcycle accident, and he didn't. And the most recent, so that's like kind of in sequential order, even though I'm not giving you the years, but, and then the most recent was in 2024 when we lost one of our senior sergeants in the line of duty. And he was found by members of his shift who had to perform life-saving measures. And then I had to notify all the department and experience that.
I appreciate you sharing that.
Thank you.
Can you share how you care for yourself in these times?
I try to work out. I have a really great partner at home who really steps up and has stepped up in those moments where I've needed some time. She's a massage therapist, so I'll have massage, I will sauna. Exercise really does help. And then there's times where I dissociate a little bit and play video games just to get my mind from thinking about like all of the heavy things. But I think ultimately my family grounds me, and knowing that I have people to care for, little people at home to care for, and I have people that care for me helps me get through.
How do you share your work with your little ones?
Well, they come to work with me. my oldest, she'll be three, and she knows I'm a police officer, and she gets to ride in the police car, and she comes to the office with me, and she has since she was an infant. Not all the time, but she does, and she makes herself right at home. And my son, he's 9 months old. He doesn't understand it yet, but he's come to the office with me as well. So they join me in events. They come to police community events. They see me in uniform. I bring them into it, into my work.
has being a parent changed your perspective on being a police officer?
Like I said before, it really grounds me. I think the days can get long, and work can sometimes be exhausting and tedious. And this is my career, but it's not my whole life. And I believe that's important for every police officer, not just in Hudson, but everywhere, to understand that our work is important and we deal with some heinous crimes, and like that work is very, very important. But you have to have something outside of this. Your family is the utmost importance. I've seen families broken up because this job like steals your time away, and you can never make more time, right? You can always make more money, but you can't make more time. And so the moments that you do get to spend with your family, you should. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that we don't have to make sacrifices, because we have, and I have over the years. Because when you take a position in public service as a first responder, right, you're expected to be on all the time and expected to show up when your community needs you, when bad things happen, you know, even, and like now, hoping that I've changed that narrative a little bit, when good things happen, when there are good events and big events happening in Hudson, we should celebrate them with our community. But allow yourself time with your family and to be present with your family, and not worry about work so much unless it's absolutely critical. Because I never want my family or my kids to say that I wasn't able to show up for them because I was showing up for other people. I want them to look at this profession, look at my career, look at me and say, hey, Mom showed up for me, and she showed up for our community, and it's that's amazing. And hoping that they never feel neglected because of this career. Instead, be proud of it.
Yeah, I wanted to back up just a little bit and understand a little bit more. You mentioned the corruption earlier, of sort of an inheritance. Can you talk about also sort of some of the... do you need a minute? Some of the things that you inherited, what was it like here, you know, in terms of that relationship with community and your inheritance?
Well, I wouldn't say I inherited too much of that perception, because that was, I think there was a lot of truth into that perception prior to my career, even more than 25, 30 years ago. So there was a huge shift with Chief Richardson, another shift with Chief Moore, and then myself. And I made it a point throughout my career to still engage with the community. I knew a lot of families. I knew I had a lot of people that I went to school with in the community that I still interacted with and I still talked to. And I, you know, I tried to carry myself as I still was just a community member, right? I happened to be a police officer now in the community that I grew up in. And so I always tried to present myself as, hey, I'm Mashonda. I'm Hudson born and raised first, police officer second. And I think that helped a great deal in building rapport with people who probably did not have a great track record with police officers in Aaron Hudson or the county, and just being genuine. You know, I always said, and I believe that message, you know, spread throughout the community, is that, like, don't give me a reason to do my job, right? And please don't put me in a position where I may have to arrest you. Because it's not like I wanted to see people in my community get in trouble, quote unquote, get in trouble, or be arrested, or, you know, be in and out of the system, whether it's youth or adults. But at the same time, I'm well aware, and I have been well aware of, you know, what goes on in Hudson, who does what, who's who, so to speak. And I think there was a little bit of mutual respect there for that. And again, just treating people like they're human goes a long way.
Can you share more about how you relate to people? What are the ways or programs that you really show up for or engage with?
One of our big partners is Greater Hudson Promise Neighborhood, and, you know, cradle to career organization, and really help youth in the city. And they were a huge part of us being able to implement a canine therapy program with grant funding. We partnered with them to implement a policy for safeguarding children of arrested parents. And so that entails, you know, us as police, when parents are incarcerated or arrested, there's a lot of trauma there, right? I think events that lead up to the arrests are already traumatizing. So working with community organizations to reduce that trauma by maybe making an arrest when children aren't present, or not handcuffing parents in front of children, or contacting a caregiver so children don't have to be present during those times to reduce trauma to them, helps build better relationships with police and families, because we're not just doing our job for the sake of doing our job. We're trying to say, like, we know we have a job to do, but we also don't want to add any more trauma to the situation right now. And so that's been big for us. You know, we show up to community cleanups for Greater Hudson. We invite the Youth Center, Greater Hudson, other community youth organizations to come to National Night Out, which we've done that for 3-4 years now. It's the first Tuesday in August of every year, and it is a national campaign to build community and police partnerships and to engage with the community in uniform, out of uniform, in a different setting.
How do you see, you know, the impact of national events? I'm thinking of George Floyd, for instance. I'm just curious to know if there were any impacts locally as well.
There were a lot. And I really don't want to talk about national events and I guess what, you know, or opinions about those things. I just don't think it's important here for this interview. What I do think is important is that in our small community, those national events have more of an impact here than people realize. And, you know, there were efforts to defund the police and, you know, police reform that was huge here. And I was able to be part of the Park Committee, the Police Advisory and Reconciliation Committee, where I was able to engage with community members and organizations as to what reforms were needed, what reforms were wanted, and really be able to, I think, influence that in a way that made the most sense here in Hudson. And I do believe that working with the community, being on Park, being able to discuss sensitive topics surrounding George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, like all of those tragic incidents, helped make our community, I think, build a stronger community, is what I meant to say. Because everyone at the table listened to understand, right? The saying is, don't listen to respond, listen to understand, and there was a lot of that. And so when there's mutual understanding, we're able to move forward and make better decisions and do what is necessary for us, and that's what we did in Hudson.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that and for bringing us back to what specifically Hudson's needs. Do you remember what some of the things that community asked for, some of the community members asked for from the police force?
Man, it seems like so long ago, but it wasn't. There was a lot of, I think, misconceptions and a lot of perception around policing in general when all of this was going on. And for here, it was listening, like, you know, not be so aggressive. You know, our body cams, like making sure our body cams were on. I think people were very worried that, you know, police were going to do harm. And so in any way that we could minimize that, they want it. You know, we had to do body cam reporting. We had to do use of force reporting. I think just more data and more information publicly is sort of a checks and balances to the public. of what we were doing and why. More accountability, more transparency. But that wasn't unique to Hudson. I think that was nationally. Policy changes.
Can you, just shifting slightly, can you say more about incarceration? You're sort of understanding of incarceration and any shifts you'd like to see yourself in the process.
I think that's a loaded question. I personally don't believe everyone needs to be incarcerated. Not all people who make poor choices or make bad mistakes are bad people. But I believe evil exists, and no matter which side of the law you're on, if you're evil, you're evil. And there should be consequences. And that makes being in this position and being a police officer very difficult, because I've always tried to see all perspectives of a situation. And, you know, if you follow the letter of the law, you know, right is right and wrong is wrong. But we all know that people make choices based on circumstance. And sometimes those circumstances are poor, and the consequences for making those poor choices are sometimes more severe based on the law. And so I believe in process as well. And over time, there have been flaws in all systems that make doing what's right and the consequences to poor choices very difficult. Like, I consider being in this profession and doing my job not not being complicit per se in the system, the flaws in the system, if that makes sense. I believe it's an opportunity to stand up and do what is right, because we do hold a lot of power.
Can you say more about that power and how you negotiate that and in relationship to the community you're working with?
Mm-hmm. Sure. You know, as police officers, we have a lot of discretion. You know, whether we see, you know, here in Hudson, we have Hudson City Code, right? They're violations. We can act upon it. We cannot. We can issue citations for a traffic stop, or we can choose not to. When we arrest someone, we can call a judge, and I think the way in which we describe what happens to that judge or in our paperwork can drastically change the direction of what happens. There are times that we can't, though. Right? When we're talking about crimes, we have to follow the law when it comes to paperwork and those things. But leading up to those things, in an interaction with someone who could be arrested for, say, disorderly conduct, we can choose to arrest that person or not based on how they're acting or how we're feeling. And that can be a lot to handle. But again, I go back to being human and understanding. And if you're not able to distinguish the two of, what is right and just and what is human, I think it makes it for a very difficult career.
What has your experience taught you about people?
That we're all the same, just in different bodies, just living different lives. Everyone deals with stress. Everyone has family problems, financial problems. We're all more alike than anyone wants to admit. And we've just chosen different paths in life. Everyone wants the same things, to be able to live in peace and to enjoy themselves, enjoy their life, and not be bothered, whether it's by a neighbor or have any annoyance whatsoever.
How would you describe Hudson today?
It's much different than it was 20 years ago. And I say that not in a negative way. I think Hudson is beautiful. It's still quaint. But the faces have changed. The families who have had roots here for decades are not all here. The families that I grew up with are not all here. And it's sad because I struggle with loving the Hudson that it is now and longing for the Hudson that it used to be. Where everyone knew everyone. And I could go down the street and my family could yell at my neighbor and they'd be like, yeah, I just saw Mashonda. She's down there. I don't think that happens anymore. And maybe it does. I still live in Hudson, and I know most of the people on my block because many of them are from Hudson. But there are several who are not. Kids used to play in the street all the time. We don't see that often.
Can you say more about those specific population shifts and the maybe economic changes or just changes to the city?
I mean, everyone likes to use the phrase gentrification. I think COVID really helped accelerate that. Being in Hudson and living in Hudson became less affordable for some. I believe the families that owned homes here and passed those homes to future generations who also remained here are still here. I mean, that's how and why my family's still here. You know, but there are families who had generations move out of the city, and then they passed, and then homes sold. So I won't sit here and blame gentrification completely for people getting pushed out, but I know that it is a part of it. And I don't mean pushed out far to new other states. I just mean further out in the county. So the demographic of Hudson has changed. We have a big Bengali community here. And I think that's incredible, seeing them have their cricket leagues and play cricket. That was definitely not prevalent when I was younger. Like, there has been a shift all around. There were a lot of antique shops, and now on Warren Street there's restaurants, there's still antique shops, there's boutiques, coffee shops. And I would say it's cleaner. There's been a big effort, I think, to go green and to bring nature back to Hudson and planting trees and flowers. Those are all positive changes, right? And I believe as a community and as a resident here in Hudson that I can fully enjoy how Hudson has changed. But again, like I said, still longing for what Hudson used to be.
Do you notice any, or what are the differences you notice in class and economics and real estate here?
Things are expensive. I'm fortunate enough to have owned my home pre-COVID. I'm not sure I would have been able to afford a home here now if I didn't purchase when I did. And I know a lot of really wonderful people who have moved to Hudson. I do see that those same people also want to change Hudson a little bit. And I'm not. I scratch my head at why you want to change a place you love so much that you moved here.
What kind of changes do you sense they want to make?
It's hard to say. From my perspective, in policing, it's people move to Hudson with this idea that it's a little bit more country. It's not a city. So we still have big city problems and nuisance people and nuisance folks. We still have an unhoused population. We still have drugs. We still have, you know, those issues that I don't think people who have moved here want to see. I don't. And maybe I'm just used to it because of growing up here. And I'm like, this is just what happens in cities. This is what we're used to. And it doesn't bother me. And I think it does bother some people in a way that it is problematic.
And you mentioned some families leaving. Was that a particular demographic you had in mind?
We still have low-income housing here. But, you know, underserved communities are, I think, not able to sustain life in Hudson or maybe in Columbia County as a whole. In some of Columbia County, with cost of living, they may work, but they're not able to afford housing here. Housing isn't available here.
Can you bring me to a typical day in your life now?
Waking up, trying to help get the kids ready for daycare with my partner, both of us trying to get ready to go to work, getting in the office, meeting with officers, my administrative staff, clerks, checking emails, going to meetings, meeting with different community organizations about anything and everything, listening to complaints about parking and traffic. Sometimes officers and different incidents. It's not as exciting work as probably it used to be. But I do get out of the office and can go for a walk or, you know, interacting with the public. It's rewarding work. And then when the day is done, I go home and see my family.
What are some of the spots you frequent in Hudson with your family?
My daughter really likes coming to the library. When she was younger, we did go to Greater Hudson. Promise Neighborhood had I think they still have one. It's like a music and movement. That's what they do at the library. During the day, I would bring her when she was younger. I hope to bring my son there, too, this summer a couple of times. The waterfront, my grandmother, who is still alive, it's the boat launch in the waterfront. It's one of her most favorite places to be. Oakdale, we still like going to the beach there. We were just at the youth center for a birthday party. And sometimes we'll go to the playground at Mill Street on Mill Street.
Appreciate that, getting a glimpse of your daily life. I want to give you the opportunity to share anything else that we didn't get to or that you feel is important for the record.
Is there anything specific you think I should speak about?
We didn't get that much into your partnership, your familial partnership. I don't know if you feel comfortable speaking more about your family.
Sure. I was married. And divorced now. And now I am with my female partner, Erica, and when I met her, I was not able to truly be myself and be who I am now, and so I'm grateful for her and her partnership in allowing me to grow with her and for her supporting me and allowing us to have a family. And to my kids, Zoe and Zane, I hope that if they listen to this one day, that they know how much they're loved. And I am truly a better person with them and because of them.
What do you imagine you'd like to see in Hudson in the next 10 years?
I think ultimately I really just want to see harmony, not so much of the you versus them. And I'm not referring to police versus community. I'm referring to the newcomers versus the families who have roots here and who've been here, right? I think the public likes to term them the implants versus Hudsonians. I think we can all coexist if we really, really like break down walls and understand what is important to each other and to strive to build one another up instead of breaking each other down. Like everyone talks about community so much, and we can't be a true community if we're not working together towards a common goal and towards more positive things. And I'd like to see that happen. I'd like to see my kids going to school here and still living here, if possible. I'd still like to see my family, like my aunt, my cousins, their families here.
One more question that I didn't get to, and feel free to let me know if you're not comfortable answering this, but I was curious about this recent news of Bard, you know, inheriting a lot of the property here in Hudson, and I was just curious to hear your thoughts or concerns about that event.
I really don't have much in-depth knowledge as to what it's going to mean for Hudson or what impact that is going to have on Hudson as a whole. I just hope that whatever partnership the city can have with Bard, and whatever decisions are made on those properties make sense for Hudson, and make sense for the residents of Hudson, old and new. And
what are some of the buildings that are in that agreement?
I think the library is one of them. I'm actually not too familiar with all of the properties that are involved, so I can't really speak to that too much. But I haven't really heard anything negative as of yet, so I'm hoping for all good things.
Well, Mashonda, I just want to deeply sort of thank you for your candidness and your openness during this interview. I really appreciated hearing all of the insight you shared about your experience. And I'm going to take that with me as I walk away from this interview and deeply grateful for your time and your presence here today.
Thank you, Crystal, for having me, and it's been wonderful.
Okay, I'm going to stop the tape now.